powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
This is Bump and Stacy
on Seattle Sports Station.
Powered by Kitsap Credit Union. Streaming through the Seattle Sports app and at seattlesports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Michael Bumpus and Stacy Rost.
Here we go now.
The Seattle Kraken are winners of seven straight after defeating the Caps last night. ESPN's Greg Wyshynski joins us now on the Emerald Queen Casino Sportsbook Hotline. And Greg, we were talking about it earlier, so my first question for you, man, it's a simple one. Are the Kraken for real?
Yeah, I think they're for real. What a difference a year makes, right? But then again, like, if you ask the team and you ask internally, they kind of thought they were for real last year, too. I mean, they obviously had their difficulties, but you know, the fact of the matter was that every positive thing that they were able to do, and underneath the hood, as we say, there were some really good things analytically that they were able to do last year. Mm. The fact that they couldn't get a save or were giving up a lead immediately after, you know, scoring a goal was a real problem. So, you know, getting a little bit better goaltending, and then obviously, you know, the arrival of Matty Beniers and being able to reset the lineup with him in the middle, and just an overall increase, I think, in effectiveness of their talent. Has led to them being very much in the hunt, and I don't quite think they're going anywhere. I think that the Pacific Division is going to have to deal with the fact that the Kraken are going to be around the playoff race for the rest of the season.
Greg, when you win seven in a row, I guess it's hard to like nitpick and try to figure out what's going wrong with this team. But during this streak, is there anything that you look at when you see them play and say, okay, if they improve that, they can be even better?
Well, I mean, there's always room for improvement, but it's kind of funny you say that. When the Devils were in their, like, 13-game winning streak, they asked Jack Hughes, you know, about something that they had to fix, and he's like, hey, man, we're on a heater. And I kind of feel that way about the Kraken right now. It's like, it's hard to really, like you said, it's really hard to nitpick the team when things are going as well as they are. So I'm going to accentuate the positives for them. And one of the things I wanted to point out that I find to be really interesting is the fact that this team has only trailed four times so far entering the third period. I think that's an incredible stat. That's fewer times than even the Boston Bruins, who are at the top of the league, have trailed into the third period. So they're doing a really good job, I think, putting themselves in a position to win, which in this league right now is you know, paramount, considering how crazy some of these games are offensively. I mean, Kraken fans know that firsthand from what happened with the Kings recently this week, but like, It's a wild offensive league right now, and to put yourself in a position to win and not have to worry about how things are going to turn out in the last, you know, 20 minutes trailing, I think has been a really big thing for the Kraken.
Do you think that that offense has trickled up steadily or pretty sharply in the NHL?
So it's a great question, because there has been a trend for the last several seasons of goal scoring on a per team per game average increasing year over year. Then things got real wacky last year, right? Like, so the average goals per game per team was around, I think, 3.14, which was the highest that we had since 1995. Now we're even higher than that. We're looking at an average that's going to be the highest we've had since 93-94.
Wow.
And last year, I think a lot of us thought it might be an anomaly because of COVID impacting the lineups and impacting games. We had more goalies play last season in the NHL than we've ever had before because of all the absences, but it's trending up again. So you have to start wondering whether we're now in just an offensive era. And there's a lot of reasons for that, such as the fact that teams are built differently, such as the fact that because of the salary cap, teams are, you know, playing younger players earlier than they would in the past. And that helps you offensively, but hurts you defensively. I think shooters are ahead of goaltenders right now. We're not seeing a real golden era for goalies right now. So there's a lot of reasons for it, but like you said, it was sort of an incremental increase for the last decade, and then just like we strapped a rocket to offense in the last two seasons.
When you look at the, I guess, the top teams in the NHL, we're talking about the Devils, the Bruins, and then you compare them with the Kraken, how big is the gap between the Kraken and these other teams, or is there even a gap?
No, there's a gap, in particular with the Bruins, just because, you know, we have some proof of concept now with the Bruins. I mean, they've been good for a while. This group has been together for a while, and you can kind of see that, you know, with some pieces back in place, like David Krejci at center, they've been able to kind of, like, ratchet up their game again and get back to that level of contention that we've saw from them for, like, the last decade. The thing about the Kraken, I think, right now that you look at in so far as, like, what is the difference between them and the other division leaders still remains defense. I mean, offensively, they're third in the league in goals per game. Nothing wrong with that. You hope that continues. But then you look at the Bruins, you look at the Devils, you look at a team like the Dallas Stars, for example, and all those teams are giving up more, are giving up less, or fewer goals, rather, than the Kraken are on a per-game average right now. So if you're looking at one point of sort of demarcation between the Kraken and the top of the league, it's that defensive side of the game. And part of that sometimes is goaltending, and obviously part of that, too, is just trying to all get on the same page and play a more cohesive game, which I think you see from the Bruins and the Devils in particular.
Are you at all surprised that the Kraken's strength has been offense? Because I remember, obviously, last year, it's an expansion franchise. We thought that it would be just like a young physical team with young physical defensemen and that they would struggle with scoring but be great with goaltending and defense. And it's kind of been not quite the opposite, but they've excelled offensively this year and more of their inconsistencies have been defensively. Are you surprised by that?
Well, I certainly didn't think they'd be playing games with scores that are like low-scoring NFL games. Like, that's not something that I was really expecting out of the Kraken. But I'll say this about it. You know, the thing that they did that was really interesting was in the first 2 years of the franchise, they really loaded up on the wings with veteran players. I mean, obviously, the players that they got in the expansion draft with a lot of wingers, they add Burakovsky to the mix. You know, they were really, really strong and really, really experienced on the wings. And then in the middle, you didn't have the same kind of impact player. And so when Beniers came up last year, at the end of last year, and we all got a glimpse of what potentially he could be in the NHL, and having watched them at Michigan, you could see that kind of player that he was going to be too. That had me excited because they didn't have that type of guy in the middle. And so he comes aboard, they get to reset their depth chart a little bit at center. That's helped. And I think just his dynamic play on both ends of the ice has sort of transformed this team in a way that I think a lot of us certainly didn't expect offensively.
Kraken play the Panthers tomorrow. Should we expect win number 8?
The Panthers are a funny team, man. There was a lot of coaching changes in the offseason, including in Florida, which was a surprising one because the guy that they had, Andrew Brunette, who, you know, took over on an interim basis after Joel Quenneville was forced to resign, ended up being up for coach of the year. And then they lost in the second round to Tampa and they turfed the guy. They said, we're done with you, man. So they went out and they hired Paul Maurice, who used to be the head coach of the Winnipeg Jets. And they're a team that's kind of played well recently. They put a hurting on Vancouver last night. They've just been sort of up and down in some of the games they played. They've looked good in a couple games, like Boston they beat, which is, you know, no small task. But they're a team that I think is still trying to figure out what they are under Paul Maurice. It's not coming as easily as it did last year for them. I predicted that they would probably drop around 20 points in the standings year over year. That looks like it's going to be the case. So long story short, it's a winnable game. But the Panthers are a team that on any given night can look like one of the top teams in the league.
I am jumping way too far ahead, which is something you should never, ever do in sports, but we can do here on sports radio. Because, Greg, it's more of like a theoretical, hypothetical question. A lot of people here in Seattle have not really watched a lot of playoff hockey. So I'm not asking whether or not you think the Kraken will be there. Rather, I'm asking you, as a hockey expert, where do you rank playoff hockey in terms of like best playoff sports to watch?
When you said jumping way ahead, I thought we were going to say, be like, where's the parade route going to be?
Exactly. Do you know how many people will be in attendance at the Kraken Stanley Cup parade?
No, you know, listen, I obviously am a very, very biased observer, but I've long said that the Stanley Cup tournament is the best postseason in sports. It's a war of attrition. You know, it is four rounds of absolute stamina draining play and brutality. You're doing this after an 82 game season in which your body has been knocked around the entire time. And it becomes almost a different sport. Like, for example, for the Kraken fans that have watched the NHL for the last 2 years, maybe you've come to the NHL recently and you've seen all these goals being scored. You're still going to see some of that in the Stanley Cup playoffs, but by and large, it becomes almost a different game. It becomes a more defensive game. It becomes a tighter scoring game. You don't necessarily see these like 6-4 games that we're seeing in the regular season, and teams have to be built for that. I think the good thing about the Kraken is that they are. I think they do have some players that can get physical and score those kind of dirty goals you have to score when the play gets a little bit tighter. I look at a team like New Jersey that, you know, can score with anybody in this league, but they might not necessarily be built for that physical grind of a playoff series. I think the Kraken might be if they make it that far. So for me, it's the best postseason in sports, you know, bar none. I don't think there's really any comparison. And every night just becomes such an adventure in this league. It's just a fantastic time.
As the season goes along, obviously teams are trying to improve and get better. Are there any moves when it comes to personnel that you feel like if the Kraken make a move here or there, they can be legitimately considered as one of the elite teams?
That's a great question. I mean, I still look at the center position, and I mean, it's obviously Beniers has really helped, and then you have Wenberg and Gord there, you know, and Donato as well. But like picking up another veteran center on an expiring contract could maybe help bolster that position. I mean, you have to be really good in the middle in order to win, specifically in the Western Conference. When you look at, you know, Edmonton with McDavid and Draisaitl, when you look at McKinnon in Colorado. And they'll probably go out and get themselves a second line center to finally replace what left with Nazem Kadri. You know, it's that part of it's that position on the ice that you really need to excel at in order to compete in that conference in particular. So, you know, if you're asking, you know, where could there be a point of improvement for this team from a roster perspective, it could be there. But again, it's hard to really criticize and nitpick this team when they're playing as well as they are. And you have a feeling that by the time we get to the trade deadline, we'll have a better understanding of maybe where the holes are on this roster and how to address them. But again, the other thing too about the Kraken is like, you know, the goal this year should be make the playoffs, but the kind of like bar should be set at have a relevant season, because it wasn't a relevant season last year. And I think for this team, and especially for their fan base, you just want to play meaningful games late in the year. And whatever they can do to get to that point, I think is what they should do.
All right. He is ESPN's Greg Wyshynski. Make sure you're following his work on ESPN. And Greg, we've loved having you on. There are plenty of people here in Seattle and in Washington State who know a ton about hockey, huge fans. And then there are a lot that are still learning. So I feel like you do a great job of breaking it down, explaining it, but also keeping in some good analysis. So this has been great. We've loved having you on. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Greg.
Anytime. Thanks for having me.
This hour of Bump and Stacey's brought to you by Advanced Hair Restoration. Let's get to Four Down Territory.
This is Four Down Territory, going inside the game with former Seahawks and Coug wide receiver Michael Bumpus.
First down Thursday Night Football last night between the Bills and Pats. What was your favorite moment from the game?
Had nothing to do with what happened on the gridiron, right? During the play of the football game. It was on the sideline, man. I saw Mac Jones really express some frustration. You got to read his lips. He said pretty much, stop running the ball. Your run game is garbage. And he later went back and said, look, emotions got the best of me. But the reason why I like that is because when you look at Mac Jones, you see a guy who is like a robot. I'm going to do all the right things. I'm going to say the right things. I'm never going to cause any controversy. And it just showed the human factor. And I love when you get to see that side of guys. Mm-hmm. So I saw Mac Jones on the sideline getting buck. And I'm like, that'll boy. Like, talk to your coordinator a little bit. You know, I wouldn't recommend doing that often, you know what I'm saying? But it's nice just to see him not be the cookie cutter quarterback that you think he is.
Second down. Do the Rams do anything that concerns you? I'm assuming it means things that are, like, good and potentially deadly for Seattle.
I was on Hawks Live last night with my guy Paul Moyer, a.k.a. Grand Moyer. And we're sitting there, we're trying to figure out what this team does with this group. Now, when they are completely healthy, they do a lot of things that scare me. Stacey, what scares me is they don't do anything that concerns me. That scares me because I'm
so
like,
so you think it's too good to be true?
It's too good to be true. Okay. I'm like, I'm going into this game and I ain't scared. I'm like,
this not is, even of the run defense?
Nah. I'm like, this is going to be good. It's going to be a good game for us. We're going to go rush for over 150 yards. Gina's going to throw for 302 tutties, no interceptions. Defense is going to look good. I'm watching film and I'm trying to convince myself that there's something that this team is doing right now that is going to challenge the Seahawks. Now, I live in reality. Mm-hmm. I understand this is the NFL and guys are going to make plays, but I cannot convince myself that there's something to be concerned about playing the Los Angeles Rams this weekend.
Okay. Hear me out. Watching film is more important than just looking at the stat sheet, because mm-hmm. the stat sheet, the box score, does not tell you the story of the game all the time. But mm-hmm. how about this one? The Kansas City Chiefs completely dominated in terms of total yardage, 437 net yards to 198 last week against LA. However, the one thing LA did well was, for the most part, keep them out of the end zone. Right. Are you worried about the red zone defense, their ability to buckle down in between the 20s? Not in between. In the red zone.
In the red zone.
In the red zone.
No, because the Hawks are pretty good in the red zone. I think they excel in there because of guys like Ken Walker, because of guys like DK. I want to address something real quick.
Yeah.
425. Why does Mac Jones get praised for yelling at his coach, but Kyler Murray gets... Is that lambasted?
Okay,
that
so 425, I debated. Lambasted. There was a
lambasted.
I say lambasted all the time.
Never heard of it.
Okay, what's your response?
My response is Kyler Murray does it all the time. Kyler Murray walks around with a horrible attitude. He's not a good teammate. His body language is garbities. The reason why Mac Jones gets a pass, because it never happens. With Kyler Murray, his whole career, he's had this stank face attitude. So now we're at kind of like the culmination to where I've just had enough. Not a double standard. It's just you do it once. All right, cool. You do it twice. All right, chill. You do it three times. All right, you're tripping. Kyler Murray is just his energy is bad. That's why Mac Jones gets the pass.
Is there something to be said, too, for Kyler Murray implying that Cliff Kingsbury and the coaching staff is a problem in a post-game press conference, taking it off the field?
Exactly. And you got to understand, like, during a football game, there's frustrations that happen all the time. Like, coaches say things and players say things that they don't mean. You got to go back, you got to apologize and say sorry. When have you heard Kyler Murray say sorry about anything that he's done? Not ever. Mac Jones immediately after goes, man, I lost my temper. You know, emotions flared. So I get it. That's why he gets a pass. 4-2-5.
Third down. We know the Seahawks defense needs a good game, but who specifically on the defense needs to have a good game?
Al Woods. Al Woods, we need you, man. Al Woods has had a good season so far. Last week wasn't this defense's best performance. He had a play where he could have made a tackle, got stiff arm. It happens. Guys make plays. I think Al Woods is a big part of what this team needs to do going forward. You got to be able to clog the gaps. You got to be able to get a push on that center and these guards and stop this run game, put pressure on the quarterback. That allows everybody else to work. Like, low-key, Al Woods is the thing that makes this defense go when it comes to getting pressure on the quarterback and stopping that run. I need number 99 to do what he's been doing all year, bounce back game for the defense. But I think Al Woods is going to be a guy.
Fourth down. Top breakout games. We know a couple players have been good all season, and we expect a couple players to play well. But who will have a breakout game on Sunday?
I'm going to say this guy's going to have a breakout game, and he's going to do it on special teams. And it's all, you know, there's no, like, real analysis that's coming with this. It's all energy. We interviewed him yesterday. I just like Trey Brown's energy. He's a confident young man. He's excited to be back out there. And I think on special teams, he's going to make some plays. He was close to making several plays last week on special teams. You guys keep your eye on number 22. When you see the punt team out there, when you see the kickoff cover team out there, check out number 22. He plays with a passion that's very youthful. He's a young man. But when you get to the NFL, sometimes you get so caught up in this, it being a business and you being so scared to make mistakes because you're going to get cut, this and that and the third. But when I watched him play yesterday, I go, he's playing free. Like, I think he has a new appreciation for the position that he's in because he had an injury that a lot of people said that he wasn't going to be able to come back for from and be extremely healthy. So I'm looking at Trey Brown. Probably not going to have a breakout game when it comes to the corner spot because I think Mike Jackson has done enough to hold that spot down for now. But watch him on special teams. Deuce Deuce is going to get loose.
We have some news in John Wofford officially named the starter. Does that change any of your expectations for the Seahawks' performance defensively against the Rams?
Nah.
Doesn't make a difference between Bryce or,
nope,
or John
Wofford. Don't make a difference. I mean, both of these guys, they bring something different to the table. I think Perkins is more of a project. They're trying to figure out what he can do. I think with Wofford, you already kind of know what he can do.
Mm-hmm.
But no, it don't matter, man. You're playing backup quarterbacks. This ain't Colt McCoy. If it was Colt McCoy, it'd be different. This ain't Colt McCoy. All right.
Colt McCoy. Secretly
backup
deadly
quarterbacks.
Does Seahawks fans want nothing to do with Colt McCoy? Can I ask an extra question? Like, not fifth down. Maybe like a 2-point conversion.
Okay.
We found the end zone on fourth down. We're going for two right now. Just an extra question. Is there anyone offensively from some of the remaining weapons they have with the Rams that you think, okay, I don't think people should look past this guy. You've watched the tape. I know you're not concerned with the Rams, and I know if anything, your lack of concern is making you a little concerned. But we talked with Trey Brown yesterday, who was like, hey, I saw Van Jefferson at the Senior Bowl. I respect his game. They have a guy who is a wide receiver that they've had play fullback. Oh, my God, I'm blanking on his name. It's like Ben something. He was like, I played against him in the Senior Bowl. He was really solid. So, I mean, a defensive player for Seattle joined us to say, like, hey, they still got some guys. Is that just gamesmanship and being polite, or is there something there?
It's both. He definitely looks at the film and say, all right, well, they don't have their dudes. But it have to be Tyler Higbee. He can still play. 48 mm-hmm. receptions, 430 yards. He is now their leading receiver. Now, he doesn't have any touchdowns this year, but I assume that they're going to lean on this guy to get it done. I think the kid you were talking about is Ben Skoronic.
Yes. I know. I'm going to butcher his name, and I'm sorry.
Yeah. Skoronic?
Skoronic.
Skoronic.
Out of Notre Dame.
That's a name right there.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's who he was talking about. But no, that's what athletes do. You got to praise the opponent. You never just get on air and pop off and say things you're not supposed to, that would give
Cole
them
Irvin.
Bulletin board material. You just don't do that.
That guy.
Oh, man.
So, yeah.
Do you think that's got to be like a top 10 bulletin board material that was actually effective? He has not had a great game.
Locker room. I think he's lost
not had
every
a,
game.
Yes, he has not had a great start against the Mariners since that moment. Okay, so we got a couple things coming your way. We are jumping back into the NFL playoff picture at 11:45. We're going to talk about some different playoff scenarios. Coming up at noon, Robert Turbin's going to join us. Don't worry, though, Mariners fans, you've been waiting very patiently. Shannon Dreher will join us at 12:30. We got hot stove talk coming your way. It is a Snoqualmie Casino Football Friday on Seattle Sports and the Seattle Sports app. Coming up next in the timeline, Drew Brees is alive, but we'll tell you why people were concerned this morning.
This is The Timeline
with Bump and Stacey.
Brought to you by 1-800-DUIOA.
It is The Timeline on Bump and Stacey. Reading you the top stories you're going to see on your own timeline. This one went viral this morning. Drew Brees is alive. First story here in The Timeline. Drew Brees was trending this morning. Why? Because in order to drum up interest in PointsBet USA's new Lightning Bets feature, the company faked Drew Brees being struck by lightning. If you haven't seen the video, it's a very short video. It looks like a behind the scenes, like they are shooting a behind the scenes shot of a commercial. Drew Brees is standing there. He is in front of the camera. You see the camera, and then there's a lightning strike, and they pretend that there's chaos, and it ends. And so it went viral because some people thought the former Saints star had actually been struck by lightning. People were wondering this morning if Drew Brees was dead. Drew Brees is fine, but this is all part of their viral campaign. They've since posted a picture of him with like dirt on his face, pretending that, you know, oh, I'm okay.
There are a couple things I do when I wake up in the morning. I check the email. I'm old. I check my emails.
I thought you meant like just our show email. No, you just mean
Twitter.
I go on Beyonce's internet.
I check the email and then I do check the Twitter. And the first thing I saw was Drew Brees struck by lightning. And as I'm getting the eye boogers out of my eye, I'm like, oh my God, he really struck by lightning. Let me look into this. Weird. Oh my God. And then I'm doing my research and stuff. I'm like, goodness gracious. I'm like, man, these dudes got me, man. Every day I'm reminded that 37 is right around the corner. And today was one of those days. I'm old. I'm getting old.
Okay.
It got me.
Not like Drew Brees fake dying this morning made me think about my own mortality. You falling for a viral moment made you realize, like, oh, I am the target demographic.
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't think I'd be there. I thought I was too smart for this.
What? Almost texted you guys. You guys see this? Drew Brees? Come on, bud.
You know how I realized I was too old? When we start saying things, and once we say it, it becomes not cool.
Yeah.
Like the second that
Which
I say,
it's almost
like,
instantaneous.
Well, that's what I'm saying. If I say, like, that's Cap, and then Nashant, the 21-year-old Seahawks intern, just, like, looks disgusted, I'm like, no one can say it anymore. I ruined it. I am so old that I have now ruined something that was briefly cool.
My son reminds that's me tough, all tough the stuff. Time that I'm old. He's 12. I'm not cool anymore.
Next up here, let's head to the Pac-12. Pac-12 Commissioner George Kliavkov says he doesn't expect a new media rights deal for the Pac to be in place by the end of this month. Not a real sense of urgency there for Kliavkov or the Pac-12.
Come on, George. You're supposed to fix this. You're supposed to make this right. At least lie to us. You know what I mean? Make us believe that you're doing everything we can. We're working hard. We're really close to making a deal. We're going to get this thing right because we can no longer stand by and let all these other conferences make these deals and take our teams. George, lie to me. You know that Mario song, I Don't Want to Know? If you're playing me, keep on. I don't want to know.
Oh, the one from many, many years ago?
Many, many years ago. Mm-hmm.
You're not helping yourself, by the way.
It's fine. I am secure mm-hmm. with my 37 years on this earth.
Of course.
Just lie to me, man. Lie to me.
Next up here, four players from the WHL's Brandon Wheat Kings helped talk down a distressed fan from jumping off a bridge in Brandon, Manitoba. Did I say that right?
Distressed man.
Distressed man. What did I say?
Distressed fan.
Distressed fan. Oh, I'm sorry. Distressed man from jumping off a bridge in Brandon, Manitoba. Obviously, this is a far more serious story. I'm sorry, you guys. I should have transitioned much more tactfully into that. These kind of moments, though, I had a friend who was in this moment and called me afterwards. Nothing, like, happened to him, but he was completely shaken up from talking to someone who was that close to doing something you can't take back. And I thank God he didn't end up doing it and everyone was okay. But like those moments really happen.
Yeah.
And thankfully he was in the right place at the right time. But oh my God, like you, I think being close to that moment doesn't just affect the person in that moment. It is scary to see people in those moments.
I couldn't imagine being in that moment, you know? And I could imagine the calm demeanor that is necessary to convince someone not to do something horrible like that. So the composure in that situation had to be awesome. Thankfully, he was there because I mean, you got to think about that person has like family and friends and stuff. Like mm-hmm. it would have been devastating. So I'm glad that did not happen.
And I just also say shout out to these young men who earlier that day were volunteering. They went from volunteering earlier that day to then talking a man off of a bridge who was contemplating ending his life.
Man.
Just unreal. All right. Next up here, Fox sideline reporter Tom Rinaldi has an insane travel schedule. Curtis, what did you find here?
So Tom Rinaldi, who always does the real tearjerker features on like Fox, he used to do it on College Game Day. Mm-hmm. His travel schedule over the last couple weeks looks a little bit like this. So he flew to Qatar November 21st. November 22nd, the next day, he flew from Qatar to New Jersey, which is where he lives. And then November 23rd, flew from New Jersey to Dallas to work the sideline of the Cowboys Thanksgiving Day game. November 24th was the game. November 25th, flew from Dallas to Columbus, Ohio. Mm-hmm. November 26th, worked the Michigan-Ohio State game. After the game, flew to Kansas City through Detroit, and then Sunday, November 27th, was on the sidelines for the Chiefs-Rams game on Fox. Monday, November 28th, flew to Qatar again on a 14-hour flight to finish up a feature on U.S. team captain Tyler Adams. And then November 29th worked the U.S.-Iran game from Qatar.
I will leave it during the same 8-day span. You went to Qatar on flights separate times.
Twice.
That's ridiculous.
Bump, you Bump, have a crazy, crazy travel schedule during football season.
Ain't nothing like that. Ain't nothing like that. And I am beat. I am so glad I'm done with college football right now.
Well, I'm even thinking of you. So you came back from Germany. You had, just because of the timing difference, you like weren't on the day you came back, but it's not like you had hours off. You were still in the air during the show.
Mm-hmm.
Then you obviously go in, you work the next couple days. You work the Saturday for Pac-12 Network. I think you flew out that day, come back, work the Seahawks game pre and post, which, by the way, is 3 hours pre and post, so 6 hours of radio. Yeah. I mean, Chris Francis the other day was like, is Bump sleeping? Is he okay? I was like, I'll have to ask him.
Nah, I'm not sleeping. But I will this weekend. And but with all that being said, my schedule is nothing like the homie Mark Burns. He must be very disciplined with what he eats, drinking his water, getting his naps in, because that's impressive.
Is there an amount of money you would accept in terms of a salary if you knew that every night you would only get 4 hours of sleep?
Yeah, of course.
No.
Yes.
No.
No, there's
I don't
not.
Think I would.
I
don't.
Would.
I don't think so.
Heck yeah.
I don't. Which is stupid. It is stupid. I should be like, yeah, $1 million a year. Absolutely. Are you kidding me? That's generational wealth. For $1 million a year, I do not think that I would accept a schedule where every single day I only have 4 hours of sleep.
I could do it. I could do it.
You would, but no, but think of your mental health.
I can do it for a couple years. I can do it for
I mean, you
years.
Get $1 million every single year that you finish and do that.
I do it for a couple years.
I don't know that it, I don't know that it's worth it,
Rinaldi,
man.
Rinaldi on one of those flights that has the seats that like fold down into a bed on in first class.
For sure.
With like your own pod.
Yeah, that was the seat that KJ was in on the way back from Germany. And us peasants went to the back and sat at a 90-degree angle for 10 hours.
Mortifying. Mortifying for you. All right. Time for the IRG injury report brought to you by IRG Physical and Hand Therapy. Y'all already know about some of these injuries, but I will remind you, Rams defensive lineman Aaron Donald will miss the first start of his career due to injury. He's got an ankle issue. Also, quarterback Matthew Stafford is not expected to play. He may not return this year, by the way. He's got a neck issue and also in concussion protocol. You'll see John Wofford under center breaking earlier, about 15 minutes ago. John Wofford will be the starter against Seattle this weekend. Seahawks, by the way, no serious injuries. TBD whether or not Ryan Neal will come back, though it sounds like his injury is much better than initially feared. Really what Seattle's dealing with is a bug going around the locker room. And for some reason, like here in Seattle, I'm sick. Everyone I know is sick. What's going on? I'm trying. All right. If you miss any part of the show, make sure you're subscribed to the Bump and Stacey podcast, the latest Seattle sports news available right on your phone every single weekday, wherever you get your podcasts, Spotify, Google Play, Apple Podcasts. Please rate and review if you do subscribe. Coming up next, we're taking a look at the Seahawks playoff picture, where all the teams stand. Seattle on the outside looking in, but what needs to happen to get a wild card spot back?
Live from the Alaska Airlines Studio, this is Seattle Sports Station. You're listening to Bump and Stacy,
powered by Kitsap Credit Union.
All right, taking a look at the playoff picture in the NFC. Here's what we got going on right now. Number one, Eagles. Yeah, we already knew that. 10-1. Second seed, Vikings. Third seed, 49ers. Fourth, the Bucks. Those are your divisional leaders right now. Three wildcard spots. First at number five, Cowboys, 8-3. Second wildcard, the Giants at 7-4. And then the Commanders at 7-5. All four NFC East teams right now holding playoff spots. A couple important things to note. Number one, Seahawks are the first team out, 6-5. Number two, all those wildcard teams in the NFC East, they're about to play each other, including the Giants and Commanders. They have back-to-back games. They have two games in 3 weeks.
That's odd.
Back-to-back for the Commanders. I think the Giants have a game in between. Commanders have a bye. So one of those teams is getting knocked out this week. The Seahawks, if they win, are back in the wildcard picture. Obviously, this is, you know, changing, ever changing. It is not this static thing that stays the same. Seahawks are going to have to keep winning. But when you're looking at the playoff standings and the playoff picture right now, know that those three wildcard spots are going to have a lot of variance because they're all in the same division. They're all about to play each other. All the Seahawks have to do is keep trying to win.
Win ball games and let this other division knock each other out. Pretty much that's what you're waiting for. That's why, oh man, I hate to live in the past, but these last two losses were huge, man.
We can live in the past. We can talk about them.
You get one of those wins and you feel a bit better about your situation, but they're still in it. You know what I mean? And then this weekend, the Niners play the Dolphins. You're hoping something happens there. The Dolphins beat the Niners. That will help you out. If I'm a Seahawk, just win. You control your own destiny pretty much if you win, because other teams are going to knock each other out and start losing ball games.
I think what's disappointing about the two losses is that they were winnable games. It wasn't like when they played San Francisco in week 2, we didn't yet know what this team was. And also it was ugly. No one felt good about that game leaving it. You were like, oh my God, they just got like smacked. Like this is done. Right. Game over. You didn't put up a fight. And then they go out. The offense looks good against, you know, the Lions. They get a win. You're a little concerned about the points and the yardage the Lions were able to put up. But, hey, win's a win. Then you go out against the Falcons and Saints. Offense continuing to perform, but defense is allowing 230-plus on the ground from the Saints and 189 on the ground from the Falcons. So you're seeing, okay, there's a recurring problem here on defense, which is the run defense, but the offense is performing. Then I think over the course of the next several games, your expectations change. Like my expectations for the season for this team changed to the point where now I'm disappointed if they don't make the playoffs.
Yeah.
I didn't expect they would touch the playoffs heading into this year. And yet now, to your point, Bump, what's disappointing about it is that those are winnable games. You were in it. You were in it.
Yeah. I'm trying to figure out when did expectations change. You beat Denver Monday Night Football. You're like, man, season's good. We beat the Broncos. Mm-hmm. Then you lose to San Fran. You lose to Atlanta. Shootout against Detroit. And then you lose to New Orleans. At that point, you are 2-3. So it had to be during that four-game win streak. And I would say probably after the Chargers win, where I'm like, okay, this team's got a chance to do something.
Mine was after Arizona, because I had been waiting all year for the Arizona with the pick six, because I've been waiting, like, they're going to have an ugly game. They've gotten lucky at times. They had an ugly moment, and when Geno threw that pick six, I was like, ah, just not their day. And then they bounced back. They had a great second half, completely dominated, and I was like, okay, they're better than I think. They are better than I think, because only good teams, mm-hmm. bad teams get knocked out in that moment. Bad teams get in their head. They can't fight back. You know what I mean? They can't come out and take over a game in which they were really struggling. Good teams put up a fight.
Yeah, I can see that. That 19-9 win, I think it was Zach Collins or something like that, the DN, edge rusher, pick six. I like the Los Angeles Chargers win because you went on the road and against an offense at the time to where you thought, you know, Justin Herbert coming back from a good year last year. Keenan Allen wasn't completely healthy, but they still had Mike Williams over there. You had Eckler. Like, this defense, to me, that was the game where I'm like, okay, they can do enough to win a ball game. And then Geno had a decent game as well. Let me pull up his numbers. He was 20 of 27, 210, two touchdowns, one interception. That was a tip pass in the middle of the field. Not really his fault there. And then Ken Walker rushed for 167 and two touchdowns. So in that moment, I'm like, okay, they went on the road. They beat a team that's supposed to be pretty good. Geno Smith had a good game, and Ken Walker is now our running back of the future. So when they beat the Chargers, that's when my thinking changed. I'm like, all right, man, now I got to start thinking about the playoffs and what needs to happen. So now where are we? Now we're in a spot where we're holding on for dear life, but I'd much rather be in this position than what I thought we were going to be in, Sam. All right, let's just get through the season and see where this draft pick ends up.
How do you feel looking at the rest of the NFC playoff picture? Really the only one that should concern you, because the divisional winners in the Northeast and South, like, all right, what are you going to do? You're not going to catch up to the Eagles at 10-1. The Eagles are going to be the number one seed. Can you catch up to the 49ers at 7-4? They're playing the Dolphins this week. So
yeah,
they
some
have
help.
Some. You yeah. need help. You need the Dolphins to help you. I'm not sure about the rest of their schedule. There may be another game on there.
They got
the
Miami,
Commanders are good.
Tampa, yep. Then they got us. And then Commanders, Vegas, Arizona. If there's anyone who's going to give them trouble, it's Miami, Tampa, and the Commanders, I think.
They've got at least some chances there to be upset.
Yeah. Yeah.
The rest of the NFC East, again, playing each other, but like, you have a tiebreaker over the Giants. I think if nothing else, the Seahawks have shown you that they could hang with pretty much any team.
Yeah.
Like, if you get to the playoffs, I'm not ruling out a wild card win by any means. If you're playing, you know, Minnesota, whoever else you might be playing there, when they're good, they look really solid and really balanced.
Here's the thing. If they get into the playoffs, anything is possible. I'm not saying they're a Super Bowl caliber type team right now, but the offense has put up a bunch of numbers and the defense has shut down teams at times. So they give you enough to make you believe that they're still in this fight. But if you get into the playoffs and you are fairly healthy and Geno is on point and you can defend the run, I can see them winning one, maybe even two games. But, you know, it's one game at a time. We have to smack the Rams on Sunday. I think a couple of weeks ago I was talking about their next four games, and I'm like, man, these guys could be 4-0 in these next four mm-hmm. games. We got to win these next two. Starts with the Rams, but this team has shown you enough to believe that they can be in the fight.
It's a Snoqualmie Casino Sportsbook Friday on Seattle Sports and the Seattle Sports app. Looking ahead to Week 13 with Robert Turbin. Turbo joins us next.